Michael Jones on a Monday afternoon right here on Sportsnet 590. The Fan, Eric Smith, Paul Jones with you. A belated happy Mother's Day to all of the mothers that celebrated yesterday, including, of course, my own, my wife, my mother-in-law, my mothers-in-law. The list goes on. Anybody that celebrated yesterday, a happy belated Mother's Day. And we move forward into a full week of sports on the Toronto scene. It's certainly a very busy time of the year. Unfortunately, it looks like things are winding down for the Toronto Raptors. Not so busy a week from now, so we've got about 7 days left in terms of the busyness for the Raptors. And then, of course, the craziness of the offseason will begin in terms of draft preparation and not only preparing for the draft, but then looking ahead to free agency and the makeup and adjustment for the roster, looking ahead to next season. But as we discussed late last week and going into the weekend, unfortunately for the Raptors, that very important stretch of games that we thought would determine their season likely did determine their season as they went 1-4 and then unfortunately picking up another loss on the weekend to the Memphis Grizzlies. Their next game coming tomorrow against the Los Angeles Clippers. Meanwhile, for the Toronto Blue Jays, a day off before playing tomorrow against the Atlanta Braves. That one in Atlanta. The Jays with a bit of a rough weekend as well, now sitting a game above 500 as they get set for the tilt against Atlanta. And of course, let's not forget about the team that maybe, well, not even maybe, let me rephrase that, the team that is at the top of the list, the team that all eyes are focused on right now, being the Toronto Maple Leafs. And just trying to stay healthy and stay secure, looking ahead to the postseason and a game coming up for the Maple Leafs on Wednesday against the Ottawa Senators later on this week against Winnipeg. So a fairly light week for the Leafs, and that's probably, as I say, a good thing if they're trying to just, you know, keep the bodies healthy in pursuit of the postseason and just trying to make sure that you enter the playoffs as healthy as possible. And I'm definitely interested in seeing how things shake out in the National Hockey League in the playoffs for all teams, but especially for teams in this North Division where you're eventually going to be having to go stateside and eventually playing against opponents. And I know that's the case for all divisions, playing opponents that you perhaps haven't seen all season and whatnot, but I think it's extra interesting and intriguing to see how it will impact the Canadian teams and whomever comes out once they make that trip down south of the border. And Jonesy, I know you and I talked about this a little bit off air. We don't have to spend a ton of time in this because I'm sure this will be a talking point going forward for the weeks to come as long as the Maple Leafs are still alive in the postseason. But wouldn't it be one of those Murphy's Law kind of things that the 1 year where the Leafs can't play in front of fans, aren't necessarily in their own building, can't have a parade, this is the year that they finally do it? And part of me hopes that it happens because, hey, the cup is the cup and winning it, period. But at the same time, there's another small part of me that thinks, like, man, I don't want it to be this year because I want the fan base that has been starving for so long to be able to actually relish in that glow if it were actually to come to fruition.
That's the hard part, isn't it, Eric? And I mean,
did we just lose Jonesy right away? I think we did. The gremlin strike. 20 seconds into Jonesy's Monday. We'll get him back in the mix in a second here. And I do want to get his thoughts on the Leafs because he is a Maple Leaf guy. He wears the blue and white. He's, you know, never hid the fact that he's been a fan since a young age. And I'm one of those guys that, listen, you want to say that I'm on the fence, whatever. I've made no bones about it over the years. I grew up a Toronto Maple Leaf fan because, yes, that was the team in the backyard, and I loved going down to Maple Leaf Gardens and sitting up in the Grays. And if I was ever lucky enough to get into a lower section, but I was Grays, man, through and through. And I loved going to that building. And I'll tell you selfishly what a thrill it was to be able to actually get into the bowels of the arena and see some of the behind the scenes stuff that you don't see as a fan. When I had an opportunity, and very privileged to have that opportunity, on the basketball side of things, when the Toronto Raptors played some neutral site games at Maple Leaf Gardens when they either couldn't play at then Sky Dome before Air Canada Center opened up. And that was an amazing thrill as a young fan. And listen, I'll tell you flat out, folks, I'm going on a bit of a tangent here until Jonesy comes back into the mix. It's a thrill to this day still to walk into almost every arena in the league. And of course, this goes back to a year and a half ago when I was still traveling before the pandemic hit and we didn't travel for the bubble and we've been calling games from home this year. But when you're on the road and you have a chance to walk into even the arenas that, like the FedEx Forum or something in Memphis, with due respect to Memphis, whatever, it's the FedEx Forum. But no, it isn't whatever. It's cool to still walk into the building and be in the back hallways and going into the dressing rooms and just kind of seeing what you didn't get a chance to see as a kid. And I absolutely still, to this day, after 20-plus years, still totally appreciate those moments, let alone when you go into more historic buildings. I mean, Staples Center doesn't have the cachet and the history that a Madison Square Garden does, but it's still pretty special to go to Staples. And as I say, MSG, the mecca to go there. So when I talk about growing up as a kid and sitting in the grays and not seeing sort of behind the velvet curtain, to then later in life as a professional in my job be able to go into Maple Leaf Gardens and go into those back hallways and to see the dressing rooms and to see just the history behind the scenes, what a thrill. What a thrill that was overall. And I just think back as a kid to growing up, yes, a Leaf fan, but as I've said many times on the air before, I was a Gretzky guy, period. So whether it was Edmonton, whether it was L.A., Gretzky was number one. And then over the years, I kind of gravitated to the Sabres in a sense because, let's be honest, the price of the Maple Leafs started to get to the point where it was easier to get tickets and to get two games in Buffalo than it was Toronto. So, again, the Leafs are somewhere in that top three, top five for me, but I can't sit here and say that I bleed the blue and white like so many people do, Jonesy, like you do, and you've grown up with that team since watching games with your dad and everything. And that's why I say I'm conflicted in terms of, do I want fans to at least get their taste from a distance this year and just say, screw it, it's been since 67, let's take it, let's win it, period, versus, man, it'd be really nice to do it maybe next year or another year where you can actually fully soak in the glory and enjoy it like you would have in any other, quote-unquote, normal year, normal season.
Okay, this was like an old cell phone conversation, right? How long was I talking to myself?
A long time, because you cut out about 5 seconds into your you was like, I got to tell you, Eric, I'm really, and you just dropped. So we basically got nothing.
I'll give you the maybe the Coles note, because I was going to town on this one. I always say it to people like Gordy Stellick, Damian Cox, guys that have written books about 1967. And I was a grade schooler, and I thought, this happens all the time. Look at how good the Leafs are. I think they're the only team since expansion that hasn't been in the finals as yet. That could we get our Sportsnet stats people on that. But if it does happen, and as I said earlier, maybe we're putting the cart before the horse here. But if it does happen, there's got to be a way to celebrate it for the fans, because what we've learned in the last 14 months is, yes, guys play for money because it makes them comfortable later in life and gives them generational wealth for their families. Yes, guys play for the camaraderie. Yes, guys play for the competitive nature that is the competitive spirit that is quenched and fed from professional sports. But you know what? We've seen it. We've heard it. Dudes play for the fans too. You know, these pro leagues, you know, NHL, MLB, WNBA, whatever it is, these men, these women, they play for the fans too. That's a big part of it. And they inspire people sometimes, whether they know it or not. So again, putting the cart before the horse. And maybe the fact that my connection dropped when I was talking about it is proof that it's going to happen. I always said I wanted to see another cup before I left the earth. And, you know, the Leafs have teased me a few times. But if it does happen this year, E, then next season they hand out the jewelry and raise a banner and do what they do. And if there's no fans in the stands, so be it. But maybe a year, two, three down the line. So, and some of those guys may not be playing anymore for the Leafs or at all, you bring it back and you do it all again with a full house at Scotiabank Arena. Like, have that reunion like really, really quickly after the fact, again, if it does happen, because that's for the fans. E, as I heard you talking about being behind the curtain, folks, we should have put our own piece of open gym on this. Ring night, how giddy you and I were. We weren't getting rings, but just to be around it and see, you know, the commissioner in the house and all the guys, the parents and the special warm-ups and you know, we got the rundown. Here's what the 12 minutes looks like, you know, while they're doing the rings. These people will be introduced. This song will be played. There'll be this video montage. The commissioner speaks. It was just – it was like we were looking at each other, pinching ourselves, like, holy crap, Batman, are you like, are you kidding me? And again, for us and for me especially, you know, 26 opening nights, and this one they're giving out rings? Come on. So to the point, Eric, about that, if it does happen, and sure, it could be Murphy's Law, there's got to be something in it for the fans, all the fans, if they're not able to be there. There's got to be a parade if it happens 5 years from now, 10 years from now, whenever. It's got to be done that way at some point.
I totally agree with you, and I'll also say this, though, as well, and whether this is – I'm not promoting this by any means, Jonesy, but let's be honest. If the Leafs actually were to win the Cup this year, I got to imagine it might not be multi-millions like the Toronto Raptors had for that parade, but guaranteed there will be tens of thousands of people that still pour out into the streets, whether they should be or shouldn't be. Pandemic aside, there will be mayhem in the streets if the Leafs actually do it. And that's, again, just the sad reality, I suppose, because, you know, people aren't going to be stopped from their partying, I suppose, if it ultimately goes down. But you're right. That's the safer bet, and that's the smarter bet. And, hey, let's also be real about it. That would be one hell of a financial windfall as well, and that's a good bet from that standpoint. Cash in on this thing as long as you can, right? Milk it 2 years from now, 3 years from now, 5 years from now, whatever it may be, because those players – you know, clearly, just like it is for the Toronto Raptors and any other championship team in any other sport, that's like lifetime money, right? That's lifetime juice. That's lifetime cachet. No matter how old you are, no matter what your role was, you're a champion, and you will always be tied to that alumni, to that team, to that history. Again, no matter how big or small your role on that team was, you are part of that, and that will carry juice for a fan base for the rest of your life.
Absolutely. No question about that. And, you know, I don't know if we'll ever get back to normal. Do you think we'll be going to be wearing masks and stuff for the rest of our lives?
Man, I don't know. I don't know what to think anymore. I really don't. I really don't. I'll say this, though, Jonesy, and we're going to get to a conversation I have with Utah Watanabe in a couple of moments here, and we will get to that later on in the show, Pat Tabler. I don't want to go too far down the path because I just don't even know if we have time. But given the fact you brought it up, the one thing that still frustrates me a little bit, Jonesy, and listen, folks, be clear. You do you. I'm doing me. I you know, I'm not going to sit here and try and tell you what you should or shouldn't do, but I will tell you how I feel and what I think is right and what I think is smart and what I think is responsible and what I think is not selfish, as opposed to what I'm about to say. The selfishness that I see from some, not from everybody, but from some. Jonesy, I was watching just flicking channels last night. And this is just again, folks, we're not even planning this stuff. You just happen to bring it up. Hopefully that's not Jonesy's lawyer saying, stop talking about this, Jonesy. I'm watching the TV last night, and I start flicking channels. I end up going through the time shift channels, and I end up somewhere in one of the Seattle channels, ABC, NBC, one of those, I don't know which one it was. And I watched the news for like 3 minutes. There was a report in Seattle about trying to bring a skate park for skateboarders and scooter riders and whatnot, a skate park in the, you know, greater Seattle area. Every single person in that report, every single person in the background, on camera, whatever, masks on while they were riding their scooters, their skateboards, whatever. They were all wearing masks. They were outside in the park. It was a beautiful day in the greater Seattle area, but they all had the masks on. This is what I don't understand. It just seems like in a lot of places in the U.S. and a lot of things I see on the news, people are going back to living their lives to some degree safely. And yes, I know that their vaccine rollout and vaccine distribution has been way better than us right now. But at the same time, they're doing things, but they're saying, okay, but maybe we got a mask. Around here, I go for a walk 25, 30 minutes ago, and right around my neighborhood, walk by a park, nobody in masks, kids, adults, whatever. Walk past people on the street, nobody in masks. And I think the suburbs might even be worse, because when you go in the downtown cores where the population density is stronger, you can't space out, so more people are wearing masks because they don't have the distance to space out properly. But I think there's a complacency and a laziness that exists to some people in suburbia especially, because they feel like, oh, well, whatever, I can space out, but they don't do so when they actually need to. That's my own. I don't know where you wanted to go with that, but it just hit me last night watching the news thinking, man, if we could just get back to doing that, maybe we could be playing tennis or shooting hoops or on the golf course or all that stuff. If we would just say, let's find a compromise then. You don't want us to do this? Well, hold on. What if we had masks on and we're spaced out? Like, this is where I think the fatigue of everything has set in for a lot of people, and thus the frustration is coming out from me, from you, from everybody, right? Maybe I lost Jonesy now. I lost him again.
Gremlins, I'm here. I'm here.
He's back. Back again,
Gremlins.
Jonesy.
Gremlins, I got to, I don't know. Maybe it's the fact that the Raptors are going to miss the playoffs and have to take the computer and have it have a religious operation performed and get rid of the demons. But I know we got to get to the interview with Utah. So let's get to that. Now, I might give another penny or two on masks when we're done.
Yeah, let's do that then. I'll give you the platform because I was sort of wax poetic there, and I apologize. I had a chance to sit down with Raptors forward Utah Watanabe. A portion of this interview aired on Sportsnet over the course of the weekend, but we wanted to give you a deeper look into this conversation and a longer look. So here I am one-on-one with Utah Watanabe.
Utah, I read that your parents were both basketball players. I believe your sister as well. Is that where the love of the sport came for you? And it's kind of strange, maybe from the outside looking in, to think of Japan and especially Tokyo, the love of baseball. But where do you think that love of basketball came for, you know, your family, right on down to you?
Yeah. So like you say, you know, I grew up in basketball family. So, you know, just playing basketball is like, you know, like, I mean, studying basketball is like super, like really natural for me. Like I didn't think about to play like any other sports. So I just grew up playing only basketball. I actually don't know how my parents got into the basketball. I never asked them, or I never really like wondered or anything. So, but I started basketball before my sister did. My sister used to play volleyball actually. And then, she started basketball a little bit later, but I don't know how my parents got into basketball, actually.
It's funny to think here you are an NBA player now. You've never asked your parents what brought them to the sport or what drew them in as fans, let alone as players or to be so inspired by the game.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that was because basketball is like kind of like only option. Like I said, I didn't like think about any other sports. So I thought my parents felt the same way, but I guess I gotta ask them tonight or tomorrow morning. Yeah.
When you're growing up and it becomes clear at whichever age it was that you're pretty darn good and you maybe have a future at this, and then you start, you know, going down the path of making the decision to come over to the United States, to North America, and to go to Connecticut in 2013. How difficult was that decision for you, for your family to make? And what ultimately led you to Connecticut specifically and to go to school there?
Yeah, that was a really tough decision to make. You know, obviously, you know, I couldn't speak any English. I didn't know anyone. That was really tough, but I always wanted to play in the basketball in the US. I wanted to play in a higher level, and to be an NBA player was always my dream. So, you know, ever since I was a kid, you know, I always wanted to come to US, and my dad's friend was head coach of St. Thomas More Prep School in Connecticut. So that's how I got connected to St. Thomas More Prep School. And, you know, my dad's friends told me that, you know, it's great school, great coach. They do a great job sending player to Division I schools. So that's how I went there.
Now, is that Jerry Quinn that you're speaking about?
Sorry, I'm sorry, I couldn't.
What is that the friend? Is that your old coach? Is that if I have the name correct? Is it Jerry Quinn?
Yes, Jerry Quinn. He's a head coach of St. Thomas More.
So now he had some sort of partnership program or training program with if I'm telling the story correctly or recounting it with schools in Japan. Is that how you got linked up then through your dad's friend?
No, actually, so that program. They were sending players to South Kent Prep School, I believe, when I was in Japan. But so I did not use that program, and I just went to St. Thomas More Prep School just because, like I said, my dad's friend was a friend with us, Coach Quinn. And I think the program switched to St. Thomas More after I went to St. Thomas More.
Okay. That's interesting. Maybe you helped start lead things then for young Japanese players. I want to ask you about that a little bit later on. But you were mentioning, coming over to North America, coming to the United States without speaking English. How difficult was the transition for you, especially at a young age? At any age, I've got to assume it's difficult. But for a young man to be coming over, a teenager coming over and trying to adjust to new culture, new life, new language, new country, new everything, not only on the floor, Yuta, but off the floor, everything. How challenging was that for you?
Yeah, I mean, on the floor, I mean, it was better, you know. I was just, you know, could play basketball, but off the floor, you know, I got to go to school, you know, I got to communicate with, like, you know, people and everything. So that was like really tough, but I was really fortunate to have great teammates, great friends, great coaches who always, you know, be around me. And even though I couldn't speak English, they are like always trying to help me. And, you know, like even I couldn't speak, they always like make sure I understand like everything they say. So that was I'm really fortunate. I have those type of people around me.
Is it kind of the language of basketball then, when you were on the floor, as you say, more challenges off the floor, but on the floor it's just body language and reading eyes, let alone eventually learning the language? You just knew where to be, you knew what was expected because you just knew the game.
Yeah, and also we use in Japan, like we use English words when we play basketball, you know, like shoot, rebound, dribble, pass, like we use that words too. So, you know, being on the court is a lot easier than being off the court.
I didn't know that. I was in with the Raptors, what is it now, 2 years ago or before the beginning of last season when we went to Tokyo, and I was just marveling at how intense the popularity was and how rabid, crazy the fans were for the sport. Has that been an adjustment for you to think about, now you're here, you're in North America, you're hopefully eventually going to be back up here in Toronto next season, but to think about how popular you were and how much more popular you are now as a member of the Raptors, and especially now in the last little while since signing the official contract as well, and knowing that your stock and that popularity is rising, how strange is that for you to kind of think of being a household name throughout Japan?
Well, I'm not that popular yet, though.
You are.
Basketball is getting bigger, but I think you mentioned it. Baseball is still the biggest sport in Japan. I think soccer comes next. And maybe basketball is like third, or maybe like even fourth or fifth. So, I mean, I think a lot of people start paying more attention to the basketball. I think more people start watching NBA. Basketball is not that popular yet. So hopefully, you know, like me, Rui, playing the NBA help the growth in Japan's basketball.
So I feel like you're being a little bit humble, because part of the reason I ask about the popularity, and I'm sure you've been told this or you've heard this yourself, you have the number one selling jersey in Japan. I mean, with due respect to you, it's not LeBron James, it's not Kevin Durant, it's not Giannis Antetokounmpo, it's Yuta Watanabe as the number one jersey. That alone tells me you're extremely popular back home. So when you go back home, I don't know when that next chance will be for you or when the last time you were home. Are you able to have a normal life Can you visit with family and friends, or are you like, you are you? Is it like a Jordan-like experience? You're mobbed in the streets. What's it? What's it like for you?
It's not like a Jordan-like, but yeah, I guess like when I walk down the street, I would say like many people realize me. But I think still like. So the reason I was number one sitting in the jersey in Japan was like, I switched the team this year and that was a new jersey for me. So last year, Rui was number one. So I'm sure like next season, I don't know if I'm gonna be number one again, cause like, you know, hopefully like I'm still in the Raptors and you know, I'm still wearing the same jersey, so I don't know how many people will buy like another jersey for me, but we'll see.
Just stay with one team, but just change the number every year, right? Then it needs to be a different number.
Yeah, maybe that'll work.
You just experienced as a teammate what Chris Boucher and Kem Birch went through with Montreal and facing Lou Dort. You mentioned Rui. I'll ask you a couple of questions on this, but first off, how special is it going to be for you to hopefully finally have that moment to go up against him in the NBA? Because we've had two opportunities already come and go where both of you, for various reasons, were hurt and out of the lineup. But, you know, fingers crossed here that you can actually square off in early May and to have that opportunity to share the floor together.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be special for sure. I'm really excited. You know, I talked to Rui about it. He's really excited too. You know, but it was unfortunate that we both had an injury. So yeah, I mean, hopefully next game, you know, we can be like really healthy and we can be on the court together, compete against each other. And, you know, I mean, that's going to be really special. And I think a lot of Japanese people, it's going to watch that game. So I think that's going to make Japan basketball more popular and bigger.
I'm going to ask you the same question that I asked Chris last night when I did the post-game interview with him. Have you had a chance to think about the impact that you're making, you and Rui, but I'm talking to you, the impact you're making on young Japanese fans, boys and girls, that are watching you right now, that are watching the Raptors, and that are going to be watching the Olympic Games, and where this could kind of lead Japanese basketball for the years and for the generations to come, to have role models like you and Rui kind of blazing the trail for so many young kids.
Yeah, I mean, you know, like when I was a kid, like I said, I've been always dreaming to NBA players, but when I say that, like, people are laughing at me, you know, like, people say, oh, that's impossible, like you were Japanese, like, you know, like, people say stuff like that. So, you know, hopefully, like, me, Rui, playing NBA is making, you know, make all the kids to feel like, you know, oh, I can be an NBA player because, like, Utah is doing, Rui is doing, you know. I hope a lot of kids can now say, you know, I want to be an NBA player, like, loud, you know, because that's possible. Anything is possible.
There's my conversation with Toronto Raptor forward Utah Watanabe, and it was actually conducted a couple of weeks ago. If you didn't catch on to that, that was the chat was conducted while Chris Boucher was still healthy, and also when we hadn't yet come to the game involving the Washington Wizards and the Toronto Raptors, and you heard us reference that in the last 90 seconds or so there, the chance for Watanabe and Rui Hachimura from the Washington Wizards finally get a chance to go toe-to-toe, and for Japanese basketball fans to see the two Japanese players playing against each other. And of course, Jonesy, it didn't happen, as Watanabe was a late scratch
Murphy's
from the
Law,
Raptor
right?
lineup. Yep, it still has not
Murphy's
gone down,
Law.
So they're going to have to wait until next year as well. But I'll tell you just quickly, I know we have to step aside for the break. We got Pat Tabler coming up in a moment. What I was really impressed with Jonesy in conducting that interview, the fact that he did the entire interview in English And I know there are many people that speak many languages, and I can barely even master the English language. And for him to be on camera for 20-plus minutes and to do that interview and speak as openly as he did about his childhood and his career and everything else, and doing it in his second language, I thought was outstanding on his part. And I just wanted to kind of, you know, show a little appreciation for the time he took to sit down and do that.
Yeah, that's terrific. And look, you know, it was one of the things that we noticed a lot with the advent of the international player in Toronto. How long it took and how long it takes to adjust to the culture and the language. I mean, we go back as far as we saw it with Bargnani, we saw it with Jose, we saw it with Garbo, we saw it with Valanciunas. It takes a bit, and you've got to give these guys time. And Utah has done just a marvelous job in his time in you know, the U.S. and, you know, playing with the Raptors. And I'm like you. I take my hat off to a guy that can be transplanted, learn a whole new culture, a whole new language, and just carry on. Not that the job is not tough enough. Then you got to do all these other things, too.
We'll shift our attention from basketball to baseball and talk about the Toronto Blue Jays and their weekend that was, and look ahead to their series against the Braves when we continue on Smith & Jones on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Back on Smith & Jones, Eric Smith, Paul Jones with you. Thanks again to Utah Watanabe for joining us on the program to start things off today. We shift our attention from basketball to baseball as the Blue Jays have the off day, but they get set for their next series against Atlanta starting tomorrow. A bit of a, well, I wouldn't call it a rough weekend, but not the greatest weekend for the Jays overall. And to discuss that and much more as the Blue Jays off to a 17-16 start, Blue Jays analyst and champion Pat Tabler. Pat, thanks for the time today.
No problem, guys. How are you all doing on this Monday?
We're doing well. Doing well, Pat. Hey, I wanted to ask you, Pat, because, you know, again, you've been there, done that. As a player, take me back to, and again, I know you had the eye, too, at the plate, but you maybe didn't have Vladdy's power, but you certainly had the eye. When you go through a slump like this, is this a slump for Vladdy, or is this pitchers figuring out how to pitch to him, how to pitch around him, not giving him anything to hit? And then as a hitter, how do you adjust to that, whether it's a slump, whether it's the pitchers? How do you adjust and find your way through a very long season?
I think the first answer to your question is it's a little bit of both. It's a little bit of a slump for him, and it's a little bit the pitchers are really being careful with him. I mean, really careful with him, because he can hurt you with one swing of the bat. I see him pulling off just a little. You know, he had that three home run game, and I don't believe he's homered since that three homer game. And it just looks like he's opening up that front shoulder just a little bit too quickly to try and knock the ball out of the ballpark, maybe trying for some home runs. His at bat the other day against Greinke, where he just stayed in there and just shot it down the right field line, I think that's a start. And to answer your question about how do you get out of it, I think the best thing that I have learned over all these years that I've been around the game is you've got to keep it simple. I think if you start to overthink it and you have too much information, you start to like wrap yourself around that, and it gets to be, you know, your mind just gets fried. I think he just has to keep it simple and say, okay, what's my strengths? Going back through the middle or going to right field? What pitch do I hit the best? I hit the fastball. So just keep it that simple with those types of thoughts, and he'll be hitting before you know it. This guy's swing doesn't allow him to go into prolonged slumps, because he takes his walks, he doesn't strike out a lot, and it's a level swing. He doesn't have like a hole in his swing. So not to fear, he's going to be fine. He's a smart kid. He's been around the game. His swing is slump proof, if you will. If you just watch him swing, he's going to be just fine. And, hopefully he can just start it tomorrow night in Atlanta.
Tabby, you know what? It's funny, 'cause I, in watching the game, I remember that, you know, the hit he got yesterday, that, you know, a little bleeder down the right field line, and the pitch was in. And I remember you talking about it on the broadcast too. And it was, it was part of that big inning where the Jays kind of rallied a little bit. Do you think, and you would know this better than anybody else, do you think when a guy gets in a hot streak, like he was a little while ago, where he was seeing the ball and hitting it well, that mentally you kind of, I wouldn't say put pressure on yourself, but you're looking for that all the time. Do you know what I mean? A guy scoring goals in hockey, or he's making buckets in basketball, and everything's got to go in. And as soon as it doesn't go in, his mind is like, "Oh man, is this the counterbalance? Am I going to slow down here? I'm going to regress to the mean." Like, does he have that mindset, or how prevalent is it in hitters when you're going great and all of a sudden the water gets turned off?
First of all, it's human nature, right? Like, hey, the good times are going to roll all the time. It's like me on the golf course today. I made one putt, then every time I thought I was going to make a putt, I kept missing it. I'm like, well, why isn't this going in? And you start freaking out, right? I don't think he's that kind of guy. I really don't. I think he's that's what I mean. He's grown up around the game enough that he can understand when things are going well and when things are going bad, and he can understand how to get out of it. And he will. Normal people, because I don't think he's normal. I think he's superhuman myself. Normal people would start to freak and start looking for this. And maybe if I hold my hands here and if I try to do this, and they'll start freaking out. But I don't think he's like that. I think he enjoys the game, and he doesn't take it too seriously. He just goes out there and does his thing, and he'll be back hitting, I think, before you know it.
Speaking with Pat Tabler. Pat, last week, I believe, when we were chatting with you, you spoke about, or maybe it was 2 weeks ago, when you talked about you yourself as a player not even looking at the standings, not even thinking about things until the All-Star break. And then it's such a long season. And I know we referenced that, Jonesy and I did, in a couple other conversations. I think it's great advice. That said, were you the same way then as a hitter, where if you're not looking at the standings, you're not looking at your numbers, you're not worrying about things, you know it's eventually going to come around? Or, and I think even in that chat you talked about you didn't see the numbers as much because it was just in the papers. It wasn't as daily online. But then how hard can that be to, as you say, just have fun, continue to stay positive, focus on just one thing, not get wrapped up in it, and with all of the sensory overload that today's players have?
You know what I told myself when I was going good? And there were times where it was, you know, when you're going good, okay? I said, just put your head down and just keep going. Don't worry about all that outside stuff that's going to come in to play, interviews here, radio spots there. They're talking about you on TV. Don't worry about that. Just put your head down and just keep going. It's a long season. And don't worry about it, oh, let's do it for this week, or let's try and stay hot for a month. You just do it every day. And you hear players say that all the time, and it's a cliche, but it is so true. One day at a time. I'm just trying to do something today, because it's so true, because you spend 6 months concentrating on trying to do your job every single day with everything that goes with it, travel and day games after night games and series and just all of that. And if you start worrying about all that outside stuff, it's going to just drive you under. Joe Maddon likes to call it the current of baseball that pulls you under, and you fight your way out of that current. You know what I'm saying? And it's so true. The game will just like take you under if you let it. So the players, and I think the young players have a good attitude, at least on the Blue Jays. You see them, they come to play every day. They're not worrying about this and that. Let the coaches worry about the record, and let them worry about who's coming in to pitch and all that. You just worry about what you have to do every single day. And if you do, I really think good things are going to happen to this team.
Tabby, the injury bug still kind of hanging around them. Is it how beneficial is it that other guys are going to have to again step forward and kind of learn, maybe not necessarily under pressure, but carry the load a little bit until guys get back and they get fully healthy? Because when they are healthy, those guys that have had that little extra experience, that little extra, burden, so to speak, you know, those guys become better players.
You know, first of all, it's not just the Blue Jay thing. It is industry-wide what is happening injury-wise in baseball. I mean, look at the Dodgers. I don't even recognize half the guys that they run out there every day because they have so many guys hurt right now. They're the world's champs. And it's just everywhere in baseball. Beneficial? I don't think Charlie Montoyo would call it beneficial that he's playing guys who would normally not be on the team. But I understand what you're saying. They need their guys. You need your A team out there all the time, and that's how you go into winning streaks, and especially on the pitching side. And there's some holes right now on the starting staff right now that's really, you know, playing some havoc with them. But you need your guys. It's great that there's other guys who wouldn't be here, that they're getting a chance to play and they're getting a chance to contribute and show this organization and other organizations that they can play. But if you ask the front office and you ask the coaches, they want their guys out there. They want them healthy and they want them to play. And that's how you put winning streaks together in good runs. So hopefully that'll start happening. I think it all evens out over a course of a season, over 6 months of baseball. You have some, like, really bad times injury-wise, and then you have some times where everybody gets healthy, and I think they're just waiting for those days to appear for them. And if they do, I think they're going to be okay.
Speaking with Pat Tabler, Jays getting set for their next series against the Braves starting tomorrow in Atlanta. Pat, speaking of that rotation, Nate Pearson making his debut, and not the greatest, let's say, but hey, maybe you give the guy a mulligan for the first one out there. What did you make of his start and maybe the reason for some of his struggles?
You know, if you saw the game, we were talking about a little bit that he's really jerking his front side and his head, and it's not really on the plate. Where your head goes, that's where the ball's going to go, and he has a tendency to jerk that head. I can relay that to, like, a hitter. Like, if a hitter is pulling off the ball, he's never going to hit. And it looks like when Nate throws the ball, and that's why there's inconsistencies, is his head, that front side, really jerks open, his shoulder, his glove, and then his head follows. So when he's releasing the ball, his head, if you saw it in the broadcast, is actually, you know, looking the other way or looking down. And I think if they clean that up, he's got all the talent. He's got everything it takes to be a winner, a big winner in the big leagues. But the inconsistent release point right now has hurt him. And until they get that straightened out, he's going to struggle with his command like he did in yesterday's game.
Tabby, are you worried about the pitching at all with this team?
I think they have some holes in the starting rotation right now until they can straighten that out. And until they do, you're going to see the bullpen night after night after night. And if that happens, there's going to be a lot of innings from those relievers. And you're going to wear them down. It's already the May 11th, and we've used 83 transactions. I mean, sooner or later, that catches up with you, right? So they have to get healthy, and they've got to get a starting rotation that consistently gives you 6-7 innings every night. And if that doesn't happen, that's going to take its toll on the bullpen. And that's, you know, you can see guys are going to get tired, they're going to get hurt, they're going to have to be shut down, you're going to have to bring other guys in who are down in AAA. So there's a lot of things going on there, and they need to get that straightened out. And you know, Nate's a big guy that if he can be one of those guys and be a guy who can give you innings, because he's got the build to give you the workload. If he can do that, and then you get the three other lefties, and then if Ross Stripling can give you some innings, they should be fine. But right now, they've got too many holes in that starting rotation. There's too many bullpen days. You know what I mean? Where you're using like 6 and 7 relievers a night, that's going to take its toll on the whole pitching staff together.
Hey, Pat, we appreciate the time and the insight as always. Thanks for doing this. Enjoy the games this week, and I'm sure we'll be chatting again soon.
Okay, guys, have a super day.
You as well.
Thanks, Pat.
There is Pat Tabler, former of Toronto Blue Jay, longtime major leaguer, of course, World Series champion as well. Blue Jays analyst as the Jays get set for their next series against Atlanta starting tomorrow. First pitch right here on Sportsnet 590 The Fan and the Blue Jays Radio Network. And, of course, on the Sportsnet TV side just after 7 o'clock Eastern. We'll step aside and come back with more Smith & Jones right here on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Back on Smith & Jones, Eric Smith, Paul Jones with you. Baseball Central coming up at the top of the hour, so they will, of course, have more on the Toronto Blue Jays and their weekend that was, and looking ahead to the series against the Braves. Thanks to Pat Tabler and Yuta Watanabe for joining us today, Jonesy. But I ate up a lot of time earlier, so I hand the keys back over to you, Jonesy, to close this thing off. As you were asking earlier about, well, are we going to be doing the masking thing, I don't know, for the rest of time. But I'll hand it over to you, Jonesy, to close things out.
No, it was just a thought, Eric. I mean, we were, you know, you were talking about people being outside and wearing masks and, you know, the thing that you saw in Seattle about the skateboard park. I just wonder, are we kind of going to be in that for the rest of our time? Is it going to be something that's mandated? Is it going to be a personal decision, like masks, no masks? And you know, what are people's, I mean, think of what people's attitudes were before to those. Oh, why is that person wearing a mask? What, you know, it raised people's antenna. Now, I mean, everybody just takes it as part of everyday life. So just kind of random thoughts going through my head in that sense. And, I just hope we can, you know, kind of get back to some semblance of normal. I really, really do. And you know, I'm hearing all these rumors and all this conjecture coming out. The government, are they going to open? They're going to thinking about opening schools again. And we've been up and down the road about, you know, outdoor activities and how they've been cut off. And you know, being a golfer, it's just absolutely killing me. But hey, so we go, so is the world we live in, and you try to make the best of it. Stay positive, make the best of it.
Again, thanks to Yuta Watanabe for joining us on the show today, as well as Pat Tabler. Baseball Central comes up next. We're back again tomorrow at 1 o'clock Eastern for more Smith & Jones right here on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.